Thank you for joining Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield. As John Hay, one of the most famous men of the 19th century, once said, all the great prizes in life are just around the corner. Let's go there together.
Welcome to Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield. I'm honored to have today with me a dear friend, a national leader, state director for Christians United for Israel, Mr. Dave McGarrah. Dave, welcome to the podcast. Glad to have you here.
And Dennis, it's great to be with you.
You know, for the listening and viewing audience, give a quick rundown on what Christians United for Israel is.
Well, it's the largest grassroots pro-Israel movement really in the world. It started back in 2007 and had about 400 people. Now it's over 10 million. And it just is one issue based organization, and that one issue is standing with Israel. And the position is that we believe that Israel has a right to exist and a right to defend herself, and that we're willing to stand with her and make some noise without requiring a change in theological position before we're willing to stand with her.
Dave, for the audience that is religiously inclined, explain the importance of Israel through the Old Testament to the New Testament, and then we'll advance over to those that are not religiously inclined.
Yeah. Well, this is a good question. Israel, of course, is really introduced back in Genesis 12 when God encounters Abraham and promises to make him the father of a great nation. And that nation was destined to be Israel. And through Abraham's miraculous downline, blessed with Isaac, comes the Jewish nation. And it goes on to say that all the nations of the world will be blessed through you. In other words, God raised up Israel as a nation, the Jewish people, to be a light to the nations and to expose the world to this God who wants to interact and know his creation, but even more wants his creation to know him. And so the Israelites, Jewish people, were entrusted with not only the sacred word of God, but also to hold forth the morals and the values and the things that were dear to the heart of God in regards to how we should live and the conduct of our lives and how we should treat one another. And so through that, God has used Israel to be very instrumental across the millennia. And we carry that over into New Testament times, which we currently live in. But the role of Israel and the Jewish people has been and still is very critical, because the prophetic plans that God has for Israel are in the process of being fulfilled, and the role it has to play in the future is still yet to be, but very very mapped out by the Bible and very critical to the future for those who appreciate the Bible and believe what it says.
For those that are searchers, they're not quite there in terms of their faith, but they're fascinated by Israel. They're what we call, let's say, non-believers in Christianity, yeah. non-Jews. Startup Nation is one of the most fascinating books that I've ever read, and it deals specifically with the amazing technology that has developed in Israel since it started in 1948, and how Israel as a nation leads the global enterprise, oftentimes in technology and the growth of technology, along with other products and services and so forth, let alone agriculture. So for the non-religious person, the importance of Israel in global economy is huge, isn't it?
Yeah, it's tremendous. And here's the interesting thing. For such a small country, most of the people in the world just, you know, use things during daily living, and they don't even pause to think about, I wonder who created this. I wonder where this came from. Who added this value to our world and daily living to make it more enjoyable or to make it easier? And Israel has contributed heavily in that arena. You name just about any arena, and Israel will be one of the leaders or right behind the leaders in what they contribute. But just as you mentioned, whether it's medicines, whether it's medical treatments, surgical procedures, the invention of so many different things that has contributed heavily to the health of the human population, drip irrigation, desalinization. They're doing things for major nations in the world who struggle with having clean water. And one of those is California. I mean, the Israelis have perfected this so much so that they have to add salt back into the water to make it tasty. So it's
amazing.
I mean, it's very thorough. But, every year America does some funding defensively, militarily, with Israel. And the requirement of those funds is to spend those back purchasing products that are manufactured here in the United States, in particular military goods. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is we send them those, and then they, behind closed doors, go to work and better what we actually create and make and manufacture here, to the point that now they just send the blueprints straight to the manufacturers and say, just make it this way.
It's pretty remarkable. And
the contribution they've made to the betterment of the world, I think, is really a wonderful, wonderful thing if people are paying attention.
Again, Startup Nation is the name of that particular book, and I'd highly recommend folks that are interested, whether they're faith-based or not, to pick that up. Dave, I want to move to October 7th, and I want to talk about what happened. Not what the media will tell you happened, but what really happened. You've been to Israel since October 7th. You've you've talked with key folks. Your partner on your own podcast is with the IDF and is called up even as we talk. Walk through the casual listener through the events of that horrendous day with Hamas attacking Israel.
Yeah. Well, it's been repeated so many times so that most people have a general understanding. But the reality is that on Saturday morning, October the 7th, was not only Shabbat, it was the Sabbath for the Jewish people, but it was also a holiday. It was the last holy day of the year, which was Simchat Torah, which is when they finish reading the fifth book of the Torah, and they start back with Genesis. And so it was a holy day. So no one's on their phones in general, the vast majority. They're not on their phones. They don't use electronics. So when this event begins to unfold just after 6 a.m., so many of the Israelis have no idea because all they hear is some sirens. And so they are trying to figure out, okay, well, something must be up. It's probably just another, rocket that was fired out of Gaza or something like that. So they're so used to it that they don't, maybe they'll run to their safe room for a few moments, but nothing major. But on this day, it was totally, totally unexpected. Now, there's yet to be investigated at a deeper level, but they say that both Egypt and the United States warned Israel that there was some attack that was pending and tried to give them heads up. Where that information fell short, is, I guess, yet to be determined. But nevertheless, Israel was taken by surprise, which is a very, very unusual thing to take Israel by surprise.
And with Iron Dome, with all of the incredible high-tech defense apparatus that's out there, Hamas came in with some pretty rudimentary action that got them below the suitable level that they could have easily been picked up. When they landed and they did what they did in the Counselor Plentiful, there was a shock across the world. I think the latest count is 1,200 plus were killed that particular day. The term that was used was that they were animals, that what they did to the people. It was a very brutal,
barbaric
behavior. Something switched, though, in terms of people's attitudes across the globe, where the victim suddenly was presented as if it was the perpetrator.
Yeah.
Explain that.
Well, that's a hard one because it doesn't make sense. That's what makes it difficult. So this attack was unleashed in a very coordinated, highly coordinated way to breach the security barriers and to be able to get into these 22 communities was not an easy task to pull off. Once the gates were blown open and they had access then into southern Israel, these 22 communities were ransacked and raped and pillaged, and as we mentioned, the word barbaric. I walked through three of those communities earlier this year, back in February, and they are still just the horrendous leftovers are still blatant. But it was something that the world initially, as you mentioned, was taken by shock and surprise, and the level of the atrocities, because this wasn't done towards a military group. It was unleashed on civilians. And that's one of the things that set this apart. Secondly, it was not only led by Hamas, but it was followed up by Palestinian people. So as I visited these communities, I listened. These communities were mainly made up of progressives, people who would be considered maybe leaning more left in their thinking and their perspective on things. They were people who were very dedicated to peace with the Palestinian people. And one of the consistent practices of so many of these communities was to engage regularly with the people of Gaza. Mm-hmm. So they would drive to the gates, pick up parents and children, and this happened weekly and many times, multiple times during the week, take them to any medical appointment, any hospital, any clinic, any special physical therapy. They would do that week after week after week, and they did it for years. And as I stood and listened there to the spokesperson for these various communities, they all said the same thing, that on October 7th, we had a different worldview than what we had previously right up to through October 6th. And that was, if we are kind, if we are loving, if we are peacekeepers, if we beat the drum on behalf of the people of Gaza and help fight for peace, then, that will be something that endears us with the Palestinian people and in particular Hamas. What we found out that day, they said, was that following Hamas coming into our communities, unleashing all the hellishness, here came the innocent civilians, the innocent Palestinians who pillaged their homes. These were people that they knew. These were people that they had invested in. These were people who they had been generous with and invested time and energy and genuine help. And it was genuine. Mm-hmm. And when they saw that these are the same people who are coming into my home now, having already had hell unleashed on us, and they're taking our things and continuing to carry out the atrocities that are actually started by Hamas at the beginning. Mm. And so they said at that point, it's totally changed our worldview on all of our efforts.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the ladies that I was talking to, she said, the way the world is treating us right now, with all the effort that we've done to make the world a better place, I'm ready to just stop trying to better the world.
Who can blame her? Who can blame her?
Yeah.
For what she's lived through, what they've lived through.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, when you think about it, and you and I have talked privately in the past about Israel's desire to go it alone if they must,
mm-hmm.
that was all theoretical. Mm-hmm. Now it's becoming very, very real world politic.
Very much so.
And so while this is happening, America is in a presidential election to determine whether they will go with Biden, who says, we wait, we stop, don't do this, or we go with Trump or Kennedy, who have different stands than Biden does.
Mm-hmm.
The real issue for me isn't so much the political side of it, though that's always there, and it directs the military side of what we're going to do and the policy side that we're going to do. But I'm stunned by the Christian community that has, by and large, divided itself into those who support Israel and those who do not.
Yeah.
What is up with that division theologically? What's the root of that?
You know, this is a head scratcher, but the reality is that replacement theology has played a very key role here. Replacement theology, what is that? It's the perspective and the belief that because the Jews rejected Christ, that the promises that God made to them that were to be, you know, eternal promises.
Eternal, correct.
That those are no longer valid, and God took those promises and laid them over onto the church or Christian people, because these are the people who embraced Christ. And because of that, the church or Christians have now replaced the Jewish people and the promises that God made to them. So now the church and the Christians are the recipients of the promises of God. So that's what replacement theology is in simplest terms. And where did that come from? It started, you know, a significant number of years ago, but one of the contributing factors is that as the Bible maps out the role of Israel, and especially its prophetic role, and then Israel disappears after AD 70, it's scattered, it's dispersed,
yeah.
The diaspora. And so there is no more Israel as we had known it. Now, the Jewish people have always had a presence. They've always had a presence in the land of Israel. Now, it got changed after AD 70 to Palestine. Mm-hmm. And so it's a pretty significant shift there. But nevertheless, when there was no Israel, and Bible teachers would try to figure out, okay, well, what is ultimately going to be fulfilled in the prophecies, if there is no Israel? Well, it must be that the church is going to play that role. And so
no Israel exists.
Yes.
There's no intention that it will exist.
Yes.
And so therefore the church has to fulfill that.
Yeah. We got to figure out how we're going to answer these prophecies and explain this.
Okay, keep
so
going.
Those kind of things happen. Well, then all of a sudden what blows that up is, you know, on May 13th, 1948, there was no Israel. And on May the 14th, 1948, here's this miraculous fulfillment of Scripture. Isaiah says that can a nation be born in a day?
Before
she goes into labor, the baby arrives. In other words, this thing happened instantaneous, miraculously, and overnight. And it was a game changer, especially for those in that camp of replacement theology. But I think that's been a big contributing factor, because there's many who are still in that camp, and they don't view modern Israel as biblical Israel, that prophecies have been fulfilled, and this is exactly what God used in his word to predict the future, or to tell us what the future would hold.
Yes.
And that would be that Israel will be in place. And he orchestrated that whole thing. And of course, he always uses, you know, men and women to fulfill those things. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, I think one of the biggest contributing factors is theological positions that have contributed heavily to this whole thing. The other thing is the whole issue of Palestinian people and Christians among those Palestinian people. And what do you do with that? And I would just say, you know, to listeners, and that is that you can be pro-Israel without being anti-Palestinian.
Correct.
You know, you don't have to, you know, be one or the other. You can love the Palestinian people, and they need to be loved. And you can still be a strong supporter of Israel.
You know, as you well know, for years I represented the International Christian Embassy Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. They really came about as a result of the fact that a Christian presence needed to be in Jerusalem because the embassies were all in Tel Aviv. And so it really continues to today a major force in helping, in some ways, a combination of good policy, an outreach like the Red Cross to help, Salvation Army. They do a marvelous job. And what I found is, and I've only been to Israel 7 times. I know you've been many more times than I have. But the truth is, every time I have gone and every time I will go, I'll see the heartbeat of the Palestinians who love their neighbors, who love their Jewish neighbors, the Jewish neighbors who love the Palestinians. Now we're at this incredible crossroads, whether it's end times theology, which I believe it has a major part of that, or whether it is a lackadaisical American Western policy of failure to understand where we are geopolitically, that says somehow, some way, just isolate America, isolate the West, let them work it out. There'll be a compromise. There'll be a 2-state compromise. There'll be a 3, whatever. Let them go. That is not where we need to be as Christians, praying for the peace of Israel, praying for the peace of Jerusalem. As we come in on a landing, I want you to tackle the issue of Christian Zionism and what those people who've never really put a label on it could start thinking about themselves as people who support and back Israel and wish to be involved in Israel through prayer, through involvement with Christians United for Israel. Bring us in for that conclusion.
Yeah. Well, you know, for those listeners who may not know what Zionism is, let alone Christian Zionism, Zionism is simply the longing and the thought and the effort to bring about the realization of getting the Jewish people back into a land that they could be Jewish, where they could carry out their religious beliefs and lifestyles. And they need that place. I mean, this is why God, you know, specifically gave the land of Israel to the Jewish people. Now, you know, from a biblical perspective, we have this whole idea of God creating, and he can do whatever he wants to with that creation. And so he chose to take this portion of land and give it to Abraham and his descendants. Mm-hmm. And the title deed of that is held in the Bible. God declares that this is, and he declares it more than one place. So time goes by after the AD 70 diaspora, and there's a longing. There's a longing in the hearts of the Jewish people to be able to get back into their land. And Zionism is that passion, that desire, that longing that we will not find fulfillment and a place of rest until we're finally back into the land that God gave us. Wow. Christian Zionism says that we believe that this land belongs to the Jewish people, that they deserve a land of their own, that God designed for that to be, and that his ultimate heart is to have his people in his land. Yep. And so Christian Zionism is one that says, I affirm that, I believe in that, I stand with that, I support that. So when we have that in the midst of the times that we're living in, you know, I think that one of the questions, and I think it's a fair question, because there's so much ignorance. And I say that in the appropriate term, that there's just, I don't know the history, I don't know the background. But if you don't know that, the question is, and this is the one that the world poses all the time, are the Jews living in the land where they're at occupying what belongs to others? Or are they actually back into the place that rightfully belongs to them?
Where the title deed is theirs.
Yes. So as I mentioned before, you know, Israel has always had a Jewish presence, even in the scatterings, even when God unleashed discipline upon the Israelite people by bringing Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians sweeping down and taking them captive and hauling them back to Babylon. You know, the result of that was because the Jewish people blew off the admonitions of God to give the ground a Sabbath rest every seven years, take a year off. Mm-hmm. They kept blowing God off for 490 years. So he finally said, you know what, if you're not going to give the land a rest, I'm going to do it myself.
Yeah.
I'm going to move you off the land, and you will spend 70 years, one year for every seven that you blew me off.
Yeah.
So while they are away, there's still a remnant there living in Israel. And it's always been that way. You know, back in 1928, before there ever was modern Israel, there was 108,000 Jews living in Israel. In 1933, you know, Alfred Balfour, he's working on the Balfour Declaration, and there's 133,000 people living there. They're all Jews. So it's never been abandoned. It's never been abandoned like what sometimes you hear historians talk about.
Yeah, the narrative that seems to creep across the pages of new revised history, right?
Yeah, so for them to come back to the land that they always had, you know, everywhere you dig in Israel, you dig up Jewish.
Yeah.
You dig up Jewish. It's always.
In fact, I have walked in not just archaeological digs, but just along outbound areas, outlier areas, and you kick the dust, the dirt, and you'll see shards of pottery.
Yeah.
It's the most amazing thing, and they're all from Jewish history.
Yeah, all. So Christian Zionism becomes a real big issue during the 21st century here, mainly among evangelicals.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, conflicting issues is, well, what do we do about, the Palestinian people? Because what it sounds like for a lot of people is that Christian Zionism is so narrow and so narrow-minded that it rules out any opportunity for those who are not Jewish to be able to actually live in the land. And once again, you have to go back and look at history. The world is calling for a two-state solution. Most people don't. They say that, but they don't even know what they're talking about.
They have no idea what it is.
2005, Ariel Sharon, who was the prime minister at the time, he pulled all of the Jews out of Gaza.
Yeah.
All of the Jewish people, all the IDF, out of Gaza. And they had been living there for years.
Mm-hmm.
And he pulled them all out so that the Palestinian people could have a place. They were set up for success. Beautiful homes, beautiful buildings, former businesses were in those buildings, beautiful gardens, beautiful farms, beautiful vineyards, beautiful beaches. Mm-hmm. There was everything in the world that you could have to be set up for success. Not only that, but nations of the world gave billions of dollars for mm-hmm. them to get off to a great start. They could build an airport, build ports, all different kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But the hatred of the Palestinian people towards the Jews would not allow them to accept any Jewish fingerprints. And so they endeavored to wipe out all the Jewish fingerprints.
Yeah.
Within 2 years, they voted in, the Palestinian people, voted in Hamas as their government ruling body. And it's declined from then.
So, and attacked the very Palestinians that voted them in.
Exactly.
It was unbelievable.
for people to say, well, we need a two-state solution. Listen, that chapter's already been done, and it's not going to work. And you couldn't set them up for more success than what they had.
And see, and you can't even imagine the level of failure that it would end up a birthing of a stillborn child. Dave, we've got to come in for a close. What is the best website for people who want to learn more about Christians United for Israel and the things that they can do at their church, maybe even begin by asking their pastor, do you support Israel?
Yeah.
Find out what your pastor believes. Find out what your denomination supports or doesn't. Yeah. What's the best website?
Yeah, thank you. CUFI, Christians United for Israel, CUFI.org.
CUFI.org.
Yeah, it's loaded with all kinds of resources, all kinds of information. They've got a phenomenal book called The Israel Course. You can get it to ebook. It's loaded with history. It's got all kinds of great resources, videos. It's got maps. It's got pictures. It's got accurate history. And so there's a lot of resources there. And if you want to get even more exposure, you could attend the DC Summit, which is going to happen in the summer of 24. This is coming summer at the end of July. You can find all that out at CUFI.org.
I have attended that in the past. It's been one of the most remarkable. This was in the early stages, about 2008, I think, when Christians United for Israel, CUFI, began, and it was tremendous. Dave McGarrah, thank you for your years of hard work, for your decades of being a senior pastor, a lead pastor, a teaching pastor now, for this incredible time in the sunset of your life where you and I are both growing older and handing off information to others so that they can walk with us as we disciple and challenge people to think about going to Israel, go to Israel, be a part of it. Dave, any final words as we come to a close?
Yes, listen, you and I are younger, longer is all. We keep doing what we do because it's in our heart.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, but brother, great to be with you.
Thank you. God bless you. And know this, that your blessing of Israel has been God's blessing of you.
Thank you.